Let me add my welcome to Phil's. My name is Simon Dowdy and I'm the vicar here at St Botolph's, and we are delighted to have you here this lunchtime for our carol service. My aim in the next 15 minutes or so is to look at Jesus Christ's own explanation of Christmas. We've already heard something of the events of Christmas, how over 700 years beforehand God announced through the prophet Isaiah that he would send a ruler, God himself, to earth. And then the announcement to Mary that she'd give birth to a son, the proclamation to the shepherds of the birth, all carefully recorded by eyewitness gospel writers, reliable, trustworthy accounts. Last week I noticed in our local bookshop Alistair Cook's biography in the window, or as I should now say, Sir Alistair Cook's biography. No doubt it would be compulsive reading in many households over Christmas as they read his own interpretation of the highs and, yes, the lows of English cricket over the last decade or so. Well, I want us to do a similar thing as we look at Christmas and to see Jesus' own interpretation, his executive summary, so to speak. So I'd be grateful if you could pick up the copies of John's Gospel once again and turn to page 8. Page 8. And I just want to read out one summary sentence. You'll see it there on page 8, underneath the phrase, "For God so loved the world." Here is Jesus Christ himself speaking. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." Notice two things. Firstly, God loved the world. At which point, I guess we may well think to ourselves, well, hang on a moment, there's nothing very surprising about that. It's just the kind of thing we expect to hear about in church. So let me ask, do we think of the world as a lovely place or an unlovely place? By which I don't mean the world in all its natural beauty, but the world as in people. A world where the leaders of NATO, who are meant to be allies, are barely on speaking terms with each other. Where a royal prince is caught in a cover-up involving manipulation and abuse and worse. A world where climate change is now so serious it's become a climate emergency. A world in which youth crime and stabbings have continued, in which minorities the world over get trampled upon by majorities. As we digest media, do we think of the world as being a lovely place or an unlovely place? And of course, it's not just kind of out there somewhere, is it? Just think of the work Christmas party. Someone was telling me just a few weeks ago that he had been tempted to cancel it this year because of all the problems it causes. Not, I think, because he's a Scrooge and a killjoy. He's just being realistic about human nature. In our own lives, perhaps we can think of family feuds and disagreements, the nightmare boss, the aggressive colleague, and so on. The world is not how we would like it to be. Our lives are not like how we'd like them to be. And of course, we only need to look inside our own hearts, and I only need to look inside my own heart to see I'm not the kind of person I'd like to be either. And therefore, you see, it is actually a very remarkable thing when we read from the lips of Jesus, "For God so loved the world." Because the problem with our world is not primarily about how we've treated each other, but how we treat God. Earlier on in John's Gospel, we're told that when Jesus came into the world, the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. Here in John chapter 3, just a couple of sentences after this most famous of verses, Jesus says, "The light has come into the world," speaking of himself, "and people love the darkness rather than the light." What is Jesus' verdict on human nature? It is that by nature we don't want to know God. It is by nature that we hide from him. Now, I imagine that most of us know that to be true in our own hearts. We may not have said it, but I guess we'll have lived it. We may be a good person or a bad person, a kind person or an unpleasant person, and yet all of us by nature live our own way without God. It's the Bible's explanation for the way in which our world as it is. The Bible gives it a name, one word, sin. I guess we think of sin as the kind of thing that gets splashed across the front page of the headlines, but actually it is simply turning our backs on God. And it is how we all by nature are. And it is therefore a very wonderful and marvellous thing to read from the lips of Jesus himself, "For God so loved the world." But notice secondly, God gave his Son. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. Jesus Christ, fully man and fully God, not simply a prophet, not simply a religious leader, but God himself come to earth in flesh and bones. That is the central claim that lies not only at the heart of Christmas, but at the heart of the Christian faith altogether. For myself, I wasn't brought up in a Christian family or a Christian home. Every Christmas, there would be a fairly half-hearted discussion about whether or not we would go to church. My mother would explain that if we went to church, then she couldn't get the turkey ready on time to have it for lunch. And every year, without fail, I can safely say the turkey won. Which is why I'm so grateful to the Christian friend who said to me when I was just beginning to think through for myself the whole question of whether God exists or not, he said, "Simon, the key issue is the identity of Jesus Christ. If he wasn't God, then add him to the whole list of countless other religious leaders throughout history. If he was God, it changes everything." And that friend was right. For a start, of course, it means that God has made himself known. It means we can know what he is like. As we read through the gospel accounts, we're told that Jesus spoke with a kind of authority that no one had ever heard before, the authority of God himself speaking. He calmed a storm with just a word, the creator in charge of his creation. He healed the sick on a scale completely unknown to humanity. He raised the dead because, of course, he is Lord with power over life and death. And he himself was raised to life, never to die again. I was very struck by an interview. You may have seen it in the paper last month with the actor and director Alan Alda. I guess he's best known for his role in the long-running TV programme MASH. And he went on to play the presidential candidate Arnold Vinnick in The West Wing. He was big interviewed about his new film Marriage Story. It was a fairly wide-ranging interview. He was asked about his beliefs, in the course of which he said, "I haven't come across any evidence for God." Now, that is a very bold claim to make indeed, isn't it? Because at Christmas, we remember that God himself has stepped into our world. In history, people saw him, they heard him, they touched him. And in the New Testament accounts, we have the trustworthy eyewitness testimony of those who did. It means, of course, that Jesus Christ is the expert. At home, when there's some technical IT problem, I generally turn to one of our technical resident experts, otherwise known as a teenager. And they quickly sort it out, and if they can't sort it out, then I know we're really in trouble. Well, in a far greater way, Jesus Christ is the expert, if you like, on life and death. And so notice, will you, in this verse, he speaks as the expert of two destinies, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. You know, it's extraordinary how much of Jesus' teaching focuses not on this life, but on the next. And so he speaks of the judgment as a reality. He speaks both of eternal life, but also of perishing, as he does here. And therefore it is the most wonderful thing to read, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." Because Jesus didn't simply come into the world to show us what God is like. He came to earth to die. In other words, you see, we can't think about Christmas without also looking ahead to Easter. Indeed, in this part of John's Gospel, Jesus has just been speaking of his crucifixion, of his being lifted up on a cross. Jesus died to take the penalty for our rejection of God. He died to bear the judgment for sin in himself. Which explains then our verse, that for those who do believe in him, here is the promise, not of eternal perishing, but instead of eternal life. Christmas, in other words, is not simply about the birth of God the revealer, but it's also about the birth of God the rescuer. It's why it's often said that Christianity is a rescue religion. I wonder if you've read about the arrangements that the department store Harrods have made this year for those who want to go and visit Father Christmas. What's the catch? Well, you can only visit if you spent £2,000 on the Harrods credit card over the last, I don't know how long it was, whether it was 6 months or 2 months or whatever, perhaps one visit, who knows. One parent was heard to complain, "They've lost the true meaning of Christmas." Whether that parent spotted the irony in their complaint, I don't know. But Christianity, you see, is not a pay-as-you-go religion. Unlike every other religion, it's not about earning your way to God, because we can't earn our way to God. None of us are good enough for that. Which is why it's such brilliant news that the message of Jesus is one of rescue. It's 10 years since US Airways Flight 1549 took off from an airport in New York on its way to North Carolina. Shortly after takeoff, it struck a flock of geese and it lost power in both engines almost immediately. The pilot, Chesley Sullenberger, managed to glide the plane down and to land it on the Hudson River. All aboard survived. It was known as the Miracle on the Hudson. You may well have seen the film starring Tom Hanks. But I wonder what those survivors would say to that pilot 10 years on. I guess something like, "He saved my life." Just as there will be countless people in eternity who will be praising Jesus Christ in a similar and yet far greater way. "He saved my life." God loved the world. God gave his Son. Which means that we face a choice. As Jesus says, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. Notice Jesus says our response to him determines our future. We can believe in him. We can experience life with God now in this world as a forgiven person. We can experience life with God in eternity. Or we can do nothing and live without God and remain unforgiven. Unforgiven in this life, unforgiven in eternity. I guess there'll be a whole range of people here this afternoon. Perhaps there are those who have put their trust in Jesus Christ already, in which case Christmas is a wonderful time, isn't it, to celebrate. And to celebrate with Jesus himself at the very heart of our celebrations. But I guess too there'll be others. Perhaps you've never really heard before why Jesus came. Perhaps you've never really given him much thought. In which case we'd love you to do so. And in just a while Phil will come and tell us how we can do that before we close. But let me finish by reading how one person, not himself from a religious background, came to put his trust in Jesus. This is what he says. As the weeks went by, I began to realise that I simply hadn't understood what I'd been rejecting. I hadn't seen how central Jesus is. Christianity isn't a philosophy, but about a person. I'd never grasped the compelling evidence that he really rose from the dead and is alive today. I hadn't seen how real Christianity differs from religion. It's not about what we do for God, but what God has done for us. I'd never understood the significance for us that Jesus died on the cross for the forgiveness of sins. I simply hadn't understood what I'd been rejecting. God loved the world. God gave his Son. In just a moment, we will stand and sing our final carol.